Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello.
Podcast Network Asia.
Disclaimer. The following program may have words or content that may trigger fear, panic, or anxiety, especially to the younger audience. Do not proceed if necessary. These are the stories that made it into our collective mind. Tales that were first heard of from far-flung places in hushed whispers of the night. We dive deep into the mysteries and wonders that merge into the culture, history, and awareness of us Filipinos. Our campsite is a safe space and remains open to everyone who wants to listen and rest or just to escape momentarily away from your realities. I am the humble campmaster, and this is the Philippine Campfire Stories. Tonight I will bring you over to the year of 1896, to the time when the island of Mapun in the province of Sulu was still known as Cagayan Sulu. Mapun was a small, isolated island and was shrouded with mystery back then. It was said that Mapun was the chosen home of a bizarre kind of creature, something like a cross between humans with their size and build, but with the wings and sharp vision of a bat. Tonight, let's talk about the Berbalangs of Sulu. The lone island of Mapun is located in the southwestern part of the Philippines in the Sulu Sea close to Sabah, Malaysia. Mapun is a volcanic island. There's an inactive volcano called Mount Nanggoy near the Sapa Lake. According to the website Boarding Gate 101, the most popular tourist attraction in Mapun would be the three crater lakes on the west part of the island. Legend says that the three lakes were once volcanoes that erupted together. The first two, Danau and Singuang, became freshwater crater lakes, now quite inaccessible and infested with crocodiles. And the third lake, Horata, empties out to the Horata Bay. The island has plenty of undiscovered falls, natural springs, inland marshes, hidden white sand beaches, and rock cliffs. There are also islets near the island where the turtles are being raised. It's like a hidden tropical paradise made for the movies. Today, it takes at least 13 hours to get there by boat if you're coming from Zamboanga City. It is the perfect hideout for something that doesn't want to be found. But the world eventually came. An anthropologist and British Navy lieutenant by the name of Ethelbert Forbes Kirchley came to Cagayan Sulu to put the unknown territory into his charts, documenting the flora and fauna as well as the customs of the people living in the island. You may find his work written at the seemingly mundane paper called Journal of the Asiatic Society of Bengal, published in 1896. However, things turned more interesting when his accounts recall a hair-raising tale of the Berbalangs in Cagayan Sulu. During the time of Skirchley's visit to the island, there was a turmoil happening between the two chieftains of the land, Haji Mahomet and Haji Ibrahim. Each had a share of the island and was quarreling who would rule where, and all those petty human arguments that goes with that. But it came to Skirchley's attention that there is a part of the island that has no ruler and not one of the two chieftains dare to step foot on. This is the town of the Berbalangs. Upon asking the natives, Skirchley knew that the Berbalangs were described to be looking very much like normal human beings, but possessing large cat-like eyes with vertical slits for pupils. It was said that there are moments when the Berbalangs need to eat human flesh, but most times, they can sustain themselves with a diet of internal organs from those who are already buried. They raid the graves and rip out organs and discard the remainder of the body for other monsters to feed on. But it was a small island, and not many people die every day. This is where the conflict starts between the humans and the Berbalangs. To relieve themselves of their hunger, Berbalangs hunt by hiding themselves in the dark of night behind the thick jungle trees. When they are securely hidden, they would project part of themselves astrally to help them hunt. Their astral form is like a floating human head with terrifyingly glowing human eyes, and feet are placed where their ears should be. Locals will say that this form of their projection enchants a human mind and makes victim think distractions, such as projecting an illusion to be near or in front of them, when in fact, the Berbalang is far or just right behind him. A definite sign that a hunting Berbalang is near is when you can hear wails and moans in the jungle, something that you won't hear from any other animal. Skirshli would describe it in his book as, "The Berbalangs may be heard coming as they make a moaning noise which is loud at a distance and dies away to a feeble wail as they approach. When they are near you, the sound of their wings may be heard and the flashing lights of their eyes can be seen like dancing fireflies in the dark. There are two things that can stand between you and death from a Berbalang attack. Some are lucky to have found the first one, which is a coconut pearl or mutianang niyog. This is a gem that can be found inside a coconut. The mutia is believed to have the power to ward off these beasts, but the protection it renders is limited only to the person who got the mutia. It loses its power when the owner dies or if it's given to another person. So what will you do if you can't find a mutia of your own? There's one more way to give yourself protection against the Berbalang. Get yourself a calamansi, or the Philippine lime. When you put calamansi juice onto the graves of your loved ones, locals say that the Berbalangs would leave that grave alone. When weapons are soaked in calamansi juice, they are also said to inflict damage to Berbalangs. But the power of Berbalang to cause confusion makes them difficult to defeat. Skirshli said, "If you see the lights and hear the moaning in front of you, the wheels suddenly round and make a cut in the opposite direction." Upon hearing these fantastic stories, Skirshli took it upon himself to go to the Berbalang town to find out if it was real or not. It was no surprise that no one wanted to come with Skirshli when he was putting together a team. The only person he was able to convince was the chieftain's son named Matali. But Matali only agreed given some conditions: to anoint some daggers with calamansi juice before they go into the jungle and find the town of Berbalang. It was already late afternoon when the two found themselves at the edge of the town. Matali realized that it was a fatal mission and he said that he will no longer proceed. Matali remained at the town's edge and chanted prayers for safety for Skirshli. He warned Skirshli that the Berbalangs are excellent tricksters. They may seem human and offer food as a welcoming gift, but the meat could be human flesh under a glamour spell. To know if the food isn't human or rotten, one must drop calamansi juice to reveal the spell. One bite, and you too will become a Berbalang, doomed with a curse to haunt humans for your life. When we come back, we'll find out what happened to Skirshli as he entered the village of the Berbalangs.
Hi, Stan C here. Just dropping by to let you know that I have my own podcast called On Deck with Stan C, where I interview iconic radio personalities as well as my friends in the radio industry. We talk about their origin stories, their most memorable on-air moments, the radio industry in the digital age, and so much more. So if you're a radiohead, just like me, make sure to follow and subscribe to On Deck with Stan C, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcast fix.
Now back to the story. Upon leaving Matali outside the edge of the village, Skirchley proceeded to his mission. Daylight was almost gone, and Skirchley recounted, "It consisted of about a dozen houses of the ordinary native type. But with the exception of a few fowls and a solitary goat, there was no living thing to be seen. I was surprised at this, and entered several houses, but all were alike deserted. Everything was in perfect order, and in one house, some rice was standing in basins, still quite hot, as though the occupants had been suddenly called away when about to begin their evening meal. Thinking perhaps that they had run away, I hallooed, but received no reply.
Is anyone out there?
And though I made it a thorough search of the vicinity, I could discover no one. I returned to Matali, and on telling him of the deserted state of the village, he turned pale and implored me to come back at once as the Berbalangs were out, and it would be dangerous to return in the dark. Matali said that the Berbalangs were out hunting for food, that's why they stumbled upon an empty village. He was afraid that if the Berbalangs would eventually return, they would definitely be prey as the sun was about to retire. Fearing for their lives, Matali and Skirchley hurried far from the village. It was then when they heard of the curious moaning cutting through the sound of the night. The Berbalangs are here. The strange sound was getting fainter, almost distant and barely audible. Matali said that means they are near and playing illusions on them. So they went in the tall kogan grass and hid. You can imagine the confusion between believing and finding all of these things crazy for the adventurous Skirchley. But they suddenly heard flapping wings. They saw a reddish glow of lights that were floating eerily. With this, the moans became louder and louder until it became fainter again. Matali begged for them to run. As they scurried through the jungle and out of the cursed village, they found safety as soon as they arrived at Matali's village. They passed by the home of a man named Hassan. It was here when they heard again the faint moans of the cursed creatures. That means the Berbalangs were around Hassan's house. Matali reassured Skirchley that Hassan possessed a mutia, and that he would be safe against them. Skirchley and Matali eventually did make it back to their houses without further incident, although they were seemingly stalked along the way, with dancing red lights occasionally visible through the trees, and the otherworldly moaning growing fainter and then louder the whole time. When the sun was up the next day, Skirchley decided to go back to Hassan's and to see what happened and get any testimony from the man about the strange event the night before. Skirchley reported, "Shortly after daybreak, I started off alone, as I could get no one to accompany me, and in due course came to Hassan's house. There was no sign of anyone. About so, I tried a door but found it fastened. I shouted several times, but no one answered. So putting my shoulder to the door, I gave a good push and it fell in. I entered the house and looked round, but could see no one. Going further in, I suddenly started back. For huddled up on the bed, the hands clenched, face distorted, and eyes staring as in horror, lay my friend Hassan. Dead.
What do you get when you combine ghosts, a haunted house, deadly nightmares, and a Pinoy psycho with true crime? You get another killer season of The Last 24 Hours. This June, listen to 5 new stories of true crime in 12 episodes that will shock and scare. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your podcast fix.
Scourgely left the village and did not return anymore, and the whole experience would supposedly haunt him for the rest of his days. He wrote at the end of his paper, "I have stated above the facts just as they occurred, and am quite unable to give any explanation of them." Based on this account, the Barbalang seemed like a beast that is straight out of the horror books. But why is it that when one searches Barbalang online, one will find humanoid creatures with bat-like wings and not as floating heads, with feet as ears just like Scourgely described? Years after Scourgely published his journal in 1896, a science fiction writer by the name of Rupert Gould picked up his story for his own book called Oddities. This book was then published in 1928 and was a key factor on how Scourgely's journal came to be known. After the world came to love oddities, Gould decided to do a major change with the description of the Barbalang when the book was reprinted. He still retained the ability of the Barbalang to astral project, but the physical description was removed to cater to the American and European audience and leave it to them to imagine and how would they look like. Because of the absence of description, modern fiction readers created their own visions on how a Barbalang would look like. Gould's book got reprinted multiple times 40 years after it was originally published and became highly popular. No wonder Barbalang came to light to new audiences and creatives. In 1979, a group of creators were looking for new characters that will serve as a villain in their project. They saw Barbalang and decided to adapt it for their story. This group of creators were the game masters for the world-renowned role-playing game called Dungeons & Dragons. By 1993, Barbalang has become one of the evil characters in Dungeons & Dragons, with humanoid built and bat-like wings that can send their astral self to fight other characters. As the game's market grew, more people came to know our own local monster, but sadly, never knew his background story. You just heard a Philippine Camper Stories. I hope that listening here has helped you even for a moment to relax and break away from the harsh problems outside of our campsite. Before we end, I would like to thank all those who have been supporting this podcast. You can listen to the past episodes for free on all major podcast platforms. Before we end, I would like to invite you to support the Philippine Camper Stories on our Patreon page. Just go to www.patreon.com/campfirestoriesph. The support you provide will help us continue our podcast, and it will be a way for more people to hear our stories. You can also follow and like our social media accounts on Twitter at campfirestoryph and on Facebook page Philippine Campfire Stories. You can also check our Instagram account at campfirestoriesph. Every other week, I take the listeners inside San Telmo Society, wherein storytellers recount their strange experiences. You can submit your own story via email, campfirestoriesph@gmail.com. Philippine Campfire Stories is a proud member of the Podcast Network Asia and powered by Podmetrics. If you're a podcaster like me and wish to monetize your podcast, join Podmetrics by logging into podmetrics.co and use our referral code Philippine Campfire Stories. With Podmetrics, you can join marketing campaigns and brand affiliations and hopefully help you earn through your podcast. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for tonight. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you again next time.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.